When Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 disappeared on March 8, 2014, the world watched as authorities searched in vain for the Boeing 777, which was lost during a routine international flight between Kuala Lumpur and Beijing with 239 people on board. As the second anniversary approaches, the search for MH370 continues and remains one of the biggest aviation mysteries of all time. CNN's aviation correspondent Richard Quest was one of the leading journalists covering the story, and in his new book, The Vanishing of Flight MH370, he offers a look at one of the decade's biggest news stories. In a coincidence, Quest had interviewed one of the two pilots a few weeks before the disappearance. It is here that he begins his chronicle of an international search effort. And as the book comes out, we hear word of a possible finding of a part of the plane. We will talk to him about that, as well as the new book, which is The Vanishing of Flight MH370. And we welcome Richard Quest to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. A great pleasure.
And really pleased to be on the roundtable. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for agreeing to do this. So give us a sense of what we know today about what happened over the weekend in finding this chunk of plane.
Well, this piece has been found on the eastern coast of Mozambique, and it's exactly where you might expect it to be, bearing in mind the plane went down off the west coast of Australia. So the natural currents of the southern Indian Ocean would have drifted this piece over the course of 2 years exactly there. And we know that because a piece called the Flapperon was found last year. However, here there are some bigger issues. The fabric is not necessarily exactly of the right sort. The stenciling of the words might suggest it's too small. So although it's believed this is from a piece of aviation, was it the right plane? Is it from a 777? And is it from the 777? And that's why it's being sent to Australia at the moment, where the Australian authorities will get to grips with it.
In your experience, how long will that take before we have some more solid clues?
I think the first solid clue, is it from a plane and is it from a 777? That will happen very quickly. But if there's no serial number, if there's no parts number, if there's no distinguishing maintenance sign or damage, then it could take a long time, because what you're left with, and this is possible, what you're left with is saying, hang on, it's from a 777, there's only one 777 missing, no one else has reported a part missing like this, therefore, ergo, it must be MH370. That will be very dissatisfying to the investigators and to the families.
When you think of this story in its whole, I mean, just the fact that nearly 2 years later we are just finding this piece, and maybe, and stress on maybe, we will have another clue. That is extraordinary, isn't it?
It is the most extraordinary thing that 2 years after we have no further evidence, none whatsoever, about what took place in the cockpit on that night. None. And we are no closer, really, to understanding exactly where that plane went down. And I'm sorry to say, but even if this piece is confirmed to be from MH370, it is not going to give us any greater precision on the place where the plane actually went down. They're searching an area at the moment. While you and I are talking, they are going up and down, searching an area of 46,000 square miles of the ocean. This will not help them narrow that gap.
You have, as I mentioned, you are a CNN aviation correspondent. You're a business anchor for CNN International. You have covered this industry, airline, aviation, and travel industries for a quarter of a century. When you are one of the few people, sir, who believes that the Malaysian authorities handled the search and rescue operations well, and ultimately that, in fact, you believe the aviation industry are the ones that did not live up to the job that they should have done. Explain that a little bit.
I think the Malaysian authority did a pretty awful job with the families and the information and how they told us what was happening. They could have told us more. They lied and obfuscated frequently. But in terms of how they dealt with where to search and how to search, I think that they did the best they could, because there's a fundamental principle here, and it is you search where you think the plane was last. And so they search in the South China Sea, last place it was known to be. And then they search in the Straits of Malacca, and they tell us that they're searching there, but we don't listen. And then they have to search because the plane's turned back, and then it's gone south. You know, I challenge any search operation. They had to put together a coalition of something like 24 countries to search north up to Kazakhstan, south down to Australia. And that's why I think that you have, let me put it this way, you have to look at how they performed with what they knew at the time, not what we know now.
Mm. And when you realize of what we know at the time, just day after day, week after week, we didn't really know anything.
Correct. And the more we didn't know anything, the harder it became to try and find something. And there were missteps along the way. The Chinese provided satellite pictures showing debris in the South China Sea. The Chinese then heard pings where none existed. Even the Australians heard pings from the emergency beacon where none existed. Time and again, the facts simply sent us over the edge because we were so desperate on this tight timescale. And throughout, there was never any certainty. When Air Asia 8501 crashed into the Java Sea from Indonesia up to Malaysia and to Singapore, we knew roughly where the plane was because of radar and because of air traffic control. And it still took them a few days to find the debris. Here we have nothing except a few obscure satellite handshakes that even the critics say might not be accurate.
You do believe, and with this new news coming out, still up in the air, you believe eventually we will find the plane.
Mm-hmm. I think they must find the plane. I think they must find it, because I think that longer term, you can't have this sort of unspoken, unknown issue taking place. You have to have a degree of certainty when there are 1,200 of these planes flying at the moment.
Okay, so a couple of things that I want to get into. And first of all, this book is fascinating to me because the story is so fascinating, and it is a mystery. So reading about it is really interesting. I will also say, being a journalist and a media guy, I find your stories and the reasons and your coverage and a look into what CNN was doing at this time to be fascinating. CNN made a conscious decision to cover this story so extensively, to the point where you got ridiculed pretty good for for being on the air all the time regarding this missing plane. You believe that the decision was correct and was a good one ultimately, and that Jeff Zucker, who made the decision, made the correct decision in covering this to the extent that the network covered it.
I think that reasonable people can disagree on the extent to which we went as far as we did. And certainly, there were many senior editors here who would roll their eyes as another hour began and would say quietly and darkly in rooms, you know, oh God, how much more are we going to do of this? And what you're really talking about there is you're at the margins. Should we have stopped after 4 weeks instead of 6 weeks? Should we have done 9 or 8 hours instead of 10 hours? But I think that what it proved was that this was a different CNN, that this network is determined And I'm not saying that because I still work here. You know, one manager said to me, you do realize, Richard, you're one of the few people ever to have written a book criticizing your employer while you still work there. So I have a certain, not death wish, but, you know, at least a certain ability to say this. I think that this was a good example, as we're seeing now with our coverage of the U.S. presidential election, that we will do whatever it takes. We will spend whatever is necessary to cover a story. Remember, I had the authority to charter a 777 plane if I could find an airline willing to do it. We couldn't, and therefore we didn't. But I actually had the purchase authority to go and spend that money if I could.
Wow. So I also want to talk about in the coverage, the one thing that you came under, CNN came under fire for, was Don Lemon, anchor for CNN, was doing this story and was using Twitter-sourced questions about the Malaysian Airlines plane and discussed the possibility of a black hole swallowing the jetliner. Do you stand by the decision to include that into the discussion as a plausible and a plausible discussion and something that should be discussed on the worldwide cable network?
I think that you can say, look, you have to put it into context, and the context is this: we're doing hours and hours of coverage. We're answering dozens and dozens of questions, and really, what this question is asking is, is there a phenomenon? Is there a phenomenon that might have affected this plane, a black hole, whatever you want to call it? And that's the real question that was being... Look, I had just answered a question or asked a question about whether psychics should be brought in to help find the plane. And I thought to myself, oh, hang on, I'm not sure we should be asking that question. And then I thought, you know something? It's 24-hour news. We have the time, we have the luxury, we have the ability, we have the experts in front of us. We can ask these sort of questions. So, would I have asked it necessarily? Yeah, reasonable people can disagree. Do I think it was the worst thing we'd ever done? Absolutely not.
No. Okay. And then, and I guess, and not to pick on the guy, but also this, I think, often gets lumped in because there is a perception about Don Lemon as an anchor too. So that often gets lumped in that perhaps it wouldn't if another anchor had done it. Is that safe to say?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I guarantee you, if I'd asked that question, it would have got exactly the same. it would have got exactly the same response.
Okay.
People were looking for a reason to put the boot into us, and maybe we gave them a reason. But frankly, you know, after all the coverage we did, after all the hours and investigative and the money and the insight we gave to this, if the worst that anybody can throw at us is the black hole question and one show, I consider that a success and a triumph, and I'll take it as a trophy.
Yeah, that's
day.
You're right. That's pretty good. Richard Quest is the CNN aviation correspondent and business anchor for CNN International. He's also the author of the new book, The Vanishing of Flight MH370, The True Story of the Hunt for the Missing Malaysian Plane. So the weirdest thing about this book and about this story is that you were on this flight. You were not on that particular flight, but you were in the cockpit of that plane with the first officer, correct?
Yeah, do you know, I've never actually managed to find out. The plane that we took from Hong Kong to Kuala Lumpur on that day when we filmed with Farik Hamid, with the first officer, I've never actually found out whether it was 9M MRO, that aircraft. Certainly, we flew with that first officer. He was just out of training on the 777 fleet, a very experienced first officer on smaller planes, but he just moved to the new aircraft.
And you did this 2 weeks before the crash.
Pure coincidence. Oh, sir, I tell you, I know the conspiracy theorists. I've got the emails. I've got the abuse. I've got the tweets. You must have known. CNN's hiding something. We always knew CNN was behind this. I've heard everything. Everything. It's a sad coincidence that we flew with the man who 2.5 weeks later would be dead.
So you have that photo. What was the nature of why did you take the photo?
Oh, with the photo, it's his photo. It's
okay.
Actually his photo, and it's his photo because whenever you're filming with somebody in the cockpit, and I've got video of me with it, at the end he asked for a selfie, and I was more than happy just to sort of say thank you. And yes, in fact, we did selfies with all the crew.
Sure.
And obviously, this is the only
CNN's
one.
CNN's on the plane. We're going to take a picture. So when you you write in the book that trip helped convince you that the pilots did not cause the crash.
It helped me convince me that he wasn't responsible, and it helped me sort of, you know, the number of pilot suicides you can count on one hand. Silk Air, Egypt Air, German Wings, one in Mozambique, a couple of others. But by and large, they're very rare. You always find out what caused it, and the pilots always crash the plane immediately. They don't waste time. It's not like some Superman or Batman horror movie where they construct the most tortuous form of doing it. They put the plane down there and then. And what we found is here, that doesn't meet that criteria. And secondly, there's no evidence. I mean, the critics, yes, I'm prepared to be wrong, and I'm prepared to have somebody say, eat your humble pie, Richard, the pilots did it. But at the moment, I'm not going to convict somebody in the court of public opinion of a murder of 238 other people without some real evidence. And that evidence does not exist.
The actual flight, what were the biggest mysteries involved there? I mean, it seems from my understanding of it and from reading your book, which really is a fascinating read, in my understanding, the of going so long without hearing from the plane and not knowing where the plane is for that period of time, that is a mystery, right?
It's a disgrace. It is a disgrace that air traffic control between Malaysia and Vietnam allowed hours, and I've seen, you know, the transcripts have been published, the timeline's been published, before somebody said, hang on, there's a missing plane. We need to sound the alarm. Meanwhile, there's a radar operator from the military who's seen blips going across the country. But the communication between military and civilian radars, which is very good in the United States, superb interchange of information. I guarantee you, a plane goes missing or goes off track here, military and civilians are talking to each other within minutes. In Malaysia, it took hours before anybody put two and two together. Meanwhile, the air traffic control operators are still saying, have you seen the plane? Call Singapore. Oh, let's ask Cambodia. Anybody else seen it? It was disgraceful.
I also assume that as a journalist and someone who has covered this beat for quite a while, you learn an awful lot. I mean, you were suddenly studying maps and diagrams of the ocean bed and of the sea floor and doing things that you probably never would have done before because of this particular incident.
There are certain commonalities to do with aviation that always crop up. Yes, you always know about the certain areas of the aircraft you're going to have to know about. But you're absolutely right. With every incident, as something becomes more and more clear, you have to start reading up further and further and further. So in this case, I had to start reading up about ACOS satellite transmission systems. I needed to know about the Inmarsat system. I had to start reading up about ocean pingers and these sort of things. Now, let me be clear. I've never pretended to be a pilot. It's not my job to try and say what did happen or what didn't happen. All I'm basically there to do is to take a whole lot of extremely complex facts, boil them down into something that somebody can understand, and then broadcast about them. I try not to cross the line into speculation, opinion, and rampant judgment. Sometimes I do. For that, I'm sorry. But the goal is to help you, to help passengers understand what happened.
We only have about 30 seconds left, so my final question for you is, was there a thought on your part of, okay, I want to write a book about this, so let's just wait until we ultimately find the plane and we end this story? Or, no, let's just go with what we have right now at the two-year anniversary so that there is a line of, okay, this is what we know at this point.
absolutely the second. The number of people who said to me, Richard, how can you write a book when there's no end? I said, the end doesn't matter. This is about what happened and how to prevent it happening again.
Well, Richard Quest is a CNN aviation correspondent and business anchor for CNN International. He is the author of the brand new book, The Vanishing of Flight MH370, The True Story of the Hunt for the Missing Malaysian Plane. The book is published by Berkeley. Richard Quest, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for spending time with us.
Thank you, sir. I'm very grateful for your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, Richard Quest, the new book, The Vanishing of Flight MH370. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.